Good morning. I guess we'll start. We got a new microphone today. Did anybody notice? So it should sound better. I can even hear myself a little bit, so it should be good. So today we're doing Ezekiel, and we're going to do the first three chapters of Ezekiel. I've kind of, I guess, done some topical stuff so far, and so we're going to go through the text real quick. And the first three chapters are on the calling of Ezekiel, and then the next several chapters are on judgments against Israel, and then there's several chapters, like each of these, like 10, then there's like 10 chapters of judgments against the nations, and then they start to turn around, where things go from the negative to the positive, and you have some hopeful passages, and then the temple, which is another hopeful passage. But starting till 30, it doesn't get positive until chapter 33. So I guess 2/3 is kind of judgmental, and then the 1/3 of the book is gives hope. Okay, so the first thing in Ezekiel, when you think of Ezekiel, you think about the wheels. And that's mostly in chapter 1. Now, it came about in the 13th year, the 5th day of the 4th month, while I was by the river Shebar among the exiles, the heavens were opened. Okay, so we saw a vision. And if you look at these visions, you know, you just read it. And then I think probably everybody would have a different vision in their mind. Exactly. But it does say that they're in human form. But if you look at the rest of it, you just, what kind of human looks like that? I mean, so in some sense, they had a human form. But each of them had four faces and four wings. And these each had a human face on one side, a lion on the right, a face of a bull on the left, and the face of the eagle somewhere. And if you look at that, I mean, those are all figures of strength, right? The lion, the bull, and the eagle. And then it talks about these living beings ran back and forth like bolts of lightning. So they're moving around quick. And this is a vision. And the appearance of the wheels and their workmanship was like sparkling topaz. And all four of them had the same form, and their appearance and workmanship being as if one wheel were within another. So you got these big wheels and then wheels within wheels. I think if you had an artist draw these, I think every single one would be completely different. I mean, it would be, well, not completely different, but I think everybody's idea in their minds is kind of different when you read these passages. And then up above these four creatures, there's a throne, and on the throne there was one that had the appearance of a man. And he had the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds after a rainy day, and he's very radiant. Such is the pyramid likeness of the glory of God. And when I saw it, I fell on my face and heard a voice speaking. So it's like the throne room of God. In chapter 2, then he said, Son of man, stand on your feet, and I will speak to you. And as he spoke to me, the Spirit entered me, and I set me on my feet, and I heard him speaking. So when I saw this, I thought, sounds like boot camp to me. I'm just like, oh my goodness. So get up, stand on your feet. And then he said, Son of man. So Son of man, who else do we know that's called Son of man? Anyone? Jesus, right? Yeah, Jesus. Son of man, I am sending you to the sons of Israel, to a rebellious people who have rebelled against me. They and their fathers have revolted against me to this very day. So I am sending you who are impudent and obstinate children, impudent and obstinate children, and you should say to them, this is what the Lord of God says, as whether they listen or not, or they are, for they are a rebellious house, they will know that a prophet has been among them. And as for you, son of man, you are not to fear them, nor fear their words. Those thistles and thorns are with you, and you will sit on the scorpions, and you shall not fear their words, nor displayed at their presence, since they are a rebellious house. They don't have scorpions in North Carolina, do they? Yeah, the only place... That's one of the few times I've screamed in my life is... We lived in Sardinia, and I think I had either a box or a paper sack, and I opened it up, and there was a scorpion there, and I screamed. I didn't know I could scream, but I can scream. At least back then, I was like, like the other time, I screamed was also. That I can remember was I was in Sardinia, also in Sardinia, same room, and I got up in the morning. I walked into the living room, and there was a cat sitting on our couch. We don't have a cat. But you should... Ezekiel, but you shall speak my words to them, whether they are rebellious. Now, you son of man, listen to what I am speaking to you. Do not be rebellious like the rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I am giving. Okay. I didn't make this big. How did that happen? Okay, then I looked, and behold, a hand was extended to me, and behold, a scroll was in it. When he spread it out before me, it was written in the front and back, and written on it were songs of mourning, sighing, and woe. Okay, so I did there. And then we're in chapter 3. Then he said to me, Son of man, eat what you find. Eat this scroll and go speak to the house. So I opened my mouth and he fed me the scroll. And he said to me, Son of man, feed your stomach and fill your body this scroll which I am giving you. Then I ate it. And it was as sweet as honey in my mouth. So this is to signify that, you know, Ezekiel found God's word sweet. So I don't know if I'd really want to eat a scroll, unless it was made with cake. or something. I don't know. Candy. Then he said, Son of man, go to the house of Israel, speak my words. For you are not being sent to a people of unintelligible speech or difficult language, but to the house of Israel. So these people can understand you. They may not pay attention to you, but they can definitely understand you. You know, I don't know if you've had people that they don't, you know, pretend they don't understand you. Like when you go to a hotel. I think last year we went to a hotel and, you know, all we asked for is towels and trash. And, you know, they pretended like they didn't understand that. And I'm like, you know, there's no way you could work as a, you know, as a custodian or janitor in a hotel. You know, it's all you do all day. It's towels and trash, right? There's no way that they didn't understand, but they pretend like they don't understand. And it's one of those things where they clean every other day, and your day is always tomorrow. I mean, it wasn't really a good situation. And that was Hilton, and that's where I used to work. I used to work for Hilton. Nor to many peoples of unintelligible speech or difficult language, those words you cannot understand, but I have sent you to the people who understand you. Yet the house of Israel will not be listen to you, since they are not willing to listen to me, and their entire house of Israel is certainly stubborn and obstinate. Behold, I've made your face just as hard as their faces, and your forehead just as hard as their foreheads. Like emery, harder than flint, I have made your forehead. Do not be afraid of them or dismayed before them, since they are our rebellious house. Yeah, I guess they say diamond's the hardest. But they make these vices now. They make these they're hydraulic or presses that just can crush a diamond into dust. So I guess they're not hard in that sense, right? A diamond, I used to think diamonds, I didn't think you could crush them, but they have stuff that can just crush them like dust. I'm like, you're kidding me. You know, as far as hardness, I guess depending on how you define hardness, emery is harder than flint. Has anybody ever seen flint? I don't think I've ever. Maybe they have them in cigarette lighters. I don't know. Moreover, he said to me, Son of man, take into your heart all my words which I will speak to you, and listen closely. Go to the exiles, to the sons of your people, and speak to them, and tell them whether they listen or not. This is what the Lord says. Then the Spirit lifted me up, and I heard a great rumbling, and behind me, blessed be the glory of the Lord in this place. And I heard the sounds of the wings of the living beings touching one another, and the sound of the wheels beside them, even a great rumbling sound. So we have the imagery we had in chapter 1 of the great living beings and the wings. So the Spirit lifted me up and took me away, and I went embittered in the rage of the Spirit, and the hand of the Lord was strong on me. Then I came to the exiles who lived beside the river Shebar at Tel Abib. And I sat there for 7 days where they were living, causing consternation among them. Okay, this section is about, that's very interesting. Okay, so I kind of switched to black. Okay. Yeah, I kind of applied the formatting afterwards, and it's kind of, I don't know why it switched from white to black there, but that's very interesting. Because it was all black in the beginning. And I guess the formatting changed some of it and then others. Now, at the end of the 7 days, the word of the Lord came to me saying, Son of man, I appointed you a watchman for the house of Israel. Whenever you hear a word from me, my mouth, warn them from me. And what do you think of when you hear the word watchman? I think of boot camp again, honestly. remember the 10 general orders of a century and
later, you know, he's looking to see if anybody or anything's going on that should.
That's cool.
That used to be the case. We don't have textile plants.
Yeah, that's sad. Maybe we'll get him back. Maybe we'll get him back here. This is a very interesting verse here. Verse 18. When I say to the wicked, you will certainly die, and you will not warn them or speak out and warn the wicked from his wicked way, so that he may live, that the wicked person shall die for his wrongdoing, but the blood I will require from your hand. So Ezekiel, he had to speak, or God was going to require it of him. And we need to be very vigilant in our evangelism, because God will require it. However, if you have warned the wicked, and he does not turn from his wickedness or from his wicked way, he shall die for wrongdoing, but you have saved yourself. Can you all even see that? I guess it shrunk more than... Okay. Yeah, I thought these were all about the same font. Again, when a righteous turns away from his righteousness and commits sin, and I place an obstacle before him, he will die. Since you have not warned him, he shall die in his sin, and his righteous deeds which he had done shall not be remembered, but his blood I will require from your hand. However, if you have warned the righteous person that was righteous is not to sin, and he does not sin, he shall certainly live, because he took warning, and you have saved yourself. Now the hand of the Lord was on me, and he said to me, get up and go out to the plain, and there I will speak to you. So I got up and went out to the plain, and behold, the glory of the Lord was standing there, and the glory that I saw on the river Shebar, and I fell on my face. But the Spirit entered me and set up on my feet and spoke with me and said to me, go shut yourself inside your house. And as for you, son of man, they will put ropes around you and bind you with them so that you do not go out among them. Moreover, I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be unable to speak and will not be a man who reprimands them, since they are a rebellious house. But when I speak, I will open your mouth and you will say, this is what the Lord God says. The one who hears, let him hear. And the one who refuses, let him refuse. They are a rebellious house. That was too quick, wasn't it? Does anybody have any questions? That was way too quick. 20 minutes.
So it's interesting there in that last verse you're talking about with a couple of things. Number one, Ezekiel had a requirement from God, like he had to speak up. But then the people got to a certain point where God said, I'm going to shut your mouth, and you're no longer going to be able to speak to them, because they have, obviously with God, had gotten to a certain point in their sin. God was no longer going to try to return them back. And so I think that's a warning we ought to really think about. Is there a point in our lives when God has tried so many times to get us to change and we refuse, and then God says, okay, you're gone. I'm just going to let you go over into your sin, and I'm no longer going to try to do that for you. It should be a warning to us to wake up and to heed those warnings in our life that God puts in our way.
Yeah, it seems like, I always think it's sort of like power steering. If God will help you, if you want to go the right direction, God's going to help you, you know. He's not going to do it for you, but he's going to help you, just like power steering does. But if you want to go in the ditch, power steering helps you, right? And then power steering will help you go right in the ditch and, you know, wreck. So it's.
When you think about it, even in their situation, they're already in exile because of their sin. They're already back in captivity because they have been so sinful. And now God has gotten to the point with, at least with Ezekiel, he says, you're not going to talk to them anymore because God just has quit trying to bring them back.
It's hard to, you know, it's hard to imagine, because it's always, you know, yeah, like you're saying, they're in exile. He's preaching, you know, he's preaching to the people that have already been punished for their sins, and or at least the sins of Israel, but they're not listening. You would think that would be a big wake-up call, you know. You know, you find out that, you know, you're in exile because of the sins of and, you know, you're still not going to change. But then, you know, some people are just so stubborn. I mean, this is the way, you know, I guess we've probably all known somebody that, you know, knows the truth, just knows it, and just won't do it. For whatever reason, you know. Very frustrating. But, you know, maybe we should be more frustrated with ourselves for not, you know, just getting in a rut and just not changing when it's so easy. So easy. You know. It's so easy to do better. Anything else?
So is the lesson for us not to be fearful of people rejecting God's word?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, because it's going to happen, right? I mean, every place. I remember this long time ago, we went on campaigns, and the guy that was kind of in charge of the campaigns, he'd been doing it for a while, and he says when he first started, he felt like he could, just the statistics were, he could convert some, they just go around the block. They could convert somebody on every block. And then, it got to be, be lucky if you convert one person in the whole town. And for us, it was that way. It was very, very, I remember a few baptisms, but do I remember people, really turning to God? There's a difference, right? I don't remember too many. It's so hard to get a baptism, and then I'm sure we've all faced that too, right? You finally get a baptism, and before you know it, you don't see him anymore. But anyway, and part of that, I think, is we need to teach people to count the cost before they become a Christian. I think a lot of it's, in that early, I think some of their teaching was more in line to, just trying to get people baptized. And that's really, if you don't talk about the obedience required, it's really, you're really just turning them from John 3:16ers to Acts 2:38ers, right, at that point. Some people think, John 3:16, I believe, I'm good. We don't want to turn them into, Acts 2:38ers. Oh, I believe and I was baptized. I'm good. So I think that's some of it. We need to be very careful in what we teach and teach them that, what really is required.
Our country's changed a lot too. We're so affluent now compared to 50 years ago, 60, 70 years ago. We have so many things that's drawn our attention, where my parents and grandparents, especially my grandparents, they were more fundamental minded, They were worried about the next meal. And now we're just, they had radio, they didn't have TV, they didn't have all the things that we have to distract us, take us in another direction.
Yeah, it's really, that's true. People, I remember when I was young, it was really all, shelter, food, shelter, and clothing, right? There was, wasn't very much more. But for me now, it's a small, I don't know what percentage of my budget is, but it's not. That'd be a good thing to look at, though. What is my, because I remember, when I first started out, though, I think minimum wage was $3.35, and we go cash our checks every Friday, and trying to survive.
I'm not that much older than you, but when I started out, it was $1.55, either $1.55 or $1.60.
Yeah. Well, don't mean everybody paid that. We had farmers only paid $2 an hour. I remember one day we went down there, one of our farmers, or both these people are our relatives, but we were working for one relative and another farmer. I just had to get there and went down there, and we unloaded two semis, and is $2 an hour. And I think we made $3 unloading two semis. And like, that wasn't really worth it. Should have gone to the other place.
Going back to kind of Ezekiel's situation, you know, where he's one man, I know there are others, but he's one of God's few servants who are actually standing up and speaking out at a time when it was really hard to do that, because it would have been so easy for him to just go along. And I was thinking about that, and then also in a comparable time in the life of the apostles, in John chapter 16, Jesus is preparing them. He has a lot of instructions to provide in those last chapters 13 through chapter 16. He has a lot of stuff to give to them. One of the things he says, which is interesting, when you think about they're confronting a world that does not want to hear what they have to say, kind of in general. Now, they've been able to reach a few people. He has grown a following. But you even remember earlier in John when he started talking about how he is the bread of life, that a lot of people left him because they said, this is too hard. Well, in John chapter 16, as Jesus is preparing that very night to be arrested and to be taken from the apostles, he said, I've said these things, this is John 16, verse 1. I've said all these things to you to keep you from falling away. Right? Because he knew what was coming that night and on into the weekend. And he knew what was ahead of the apostles. It was going to be difficult. They were going to be God's spokesman in a world where a majority of people aren't really listening. He said, verse 2, they will put you out of the synagogues. Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you, notice this, will think he is offering service to God. Now, I find that very fascinating, that they had gotten so flipped in their way of thinking that in trying to kill the apostles, they thought they were doing God's work. And that lays out perfectly when you go into the book of Acts and you look at chapter 7 with Stephen and the young man Saul there, right? They kill Stephen because he's simply trying to do what Ezekiel was doing, which is proclaiming the word of God, trying to convert people to the right way. And yet he dies for his faith. Well, Saul, a young man who's there where they lay the coats at the end of chapter 7, you go on into chapter 8, what does that young man do? Well, he goes on to persecute the church. He's going into people's homes. He's having them arrested, taking them, and they're being tried as though they're some kind of hardened criminal. Well, he did that, and he says this in his writings, he did that with a good conscience. Saul thought, as he was doing that, I'm offering service to God. And so Jesus is warning them. He says, I'm telling you this that you may not fall away. I think the key for us is we are being asked to do a hard thing, which is to tell the world you need to come back to God. You need to change the way you're living. You need to live like God has called you to. And a lot of people don't want to hear that message. When you start talking about things like adultery, fornication, drunkenness, lasciviousness, those kind of concepts, and you're trying to proclaim that to the world, they don't want to hear that. But yet that's what we're called to do. And Jesus says, I want you to remember what I'm telling you when those hard times come, when you hit the moment of crisis, that you do not fall away. And so I think there's a lot that's applicable from Ezekiel's day to our day, and well, to the day of the apostles, and to even our day, we have to stand firm. And God said to Ezekiel, I'm requiring one thing of you, speak up. Now, he didn't require their conversion of the people on Ezekiel, but he did require Ezekiel to stand up and to speak. And the same is true with us.
Sure. Yeah, we just definitely need to speak up. Got it. 10:04. Thought I had plenty of stuff to go over. Anything else? Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say that what Brian says really, it brings things to a head, because that's what we're required to do. Sometimes, I know that I've done this myself, is you look back on ancient Israel, and part of you wants to say, what was wrong with you people? You had God literally right there with you, and you still screwed up. And, but the other part says, but they're human. And despite what people try to say today, humans are pretty much the same now as they were back then. And if we believe in God, all we're required to do is talk to people. Now, we convert who we can, but we need to remember that we will never convert everyone. We can't. It just isn't going to happen. So we need to try to curtail our disappointment a little bit when someone does walk away. We're just required to speak the word and to talk to people. But we need to try not to be too disappointed when they don't respond, because it's going to happen.
Okay, and that doesn't mean that we stop praying for souls to return. That's all part of it, but you know, don't let it get us too discouraged. But I've seen a lot of them, and I've seen a lot of those, but I don't stop praying.
For sure. Yeah, we don't want to give up just because we get turned down, because we're going to get turned down. And we're going to get people turned down by people we really care about, for sure.
Go ahead. So, good discussion. My question, and so I'm thinking about, what's the difference in Ezekiel living in Israel, I guess, in captivity, versus like Jonah and the story of Nineveh? Are we closer to Jonah and having to preach to Nineveh, or are we more like Ezekiel living in captivity, you know, with Israel? You know, and I don't know.
Yeah, some people are definitely in this world, some people are more like the Ninevites, but some people are more. Definitely some people are more like the, you know, they're religious. So I guess it's about 50-50 now as far as religion, right? And some sort of religion. And people that aren't at all. And what's amazing to me is even the people that are not religious seem to have this moral code. They have some sort of code, right? At least the ones, you know, you see it, that speak up. You know, they have a moral code. You know, that seems like the holy of holies is abortion, right? I mean, the right to abortion is the holiest of all. It's as if that's the holiest of all rights or acts. And you're just, you know, how far have they gone, right? I mean, to me, it's almost unbelievable, but it's true. I mean, you know, and the right to pretend you're a girl if you're a boy is number two, right? I think that's probably the right order. You might think for a while there it's probably flipped, but I think it's right now the second. Is the right to think, the right to pretend you're a girl if you're a boy, and everybody else has got to go along with it to the extreme. to even to the case of, you know, sports. Probably the biggest number one thing, I mean, elite men, when it comes to sports, almost everything, it's about 10% difference, right? It's 10% faster, probably more than 10% stronger when it comes to weightlifting. But, there's just definitely, people just pretend that doesn't exist, that women, to me, just want to destroy women's sports in my mind. You know, the whole reason to have women's sports was because there is a difference. There is that difference in, capabilities.
Ezekiel was told to talk, and that first thing he said, go, and you're talking to people, you're being told to go talk to people that's going to understand what you're saying. Whereas Jonah was told to go to a Gentile nation, and the enemy nation, and I think that might be the crust of what you were asking. I think we live in a country where we are. These are people that are supposedly based in fundamental Christian values. Our country was founded on fundamental Christian values. They should understand what we're saying, but they've gone so far away from that. I think it's kind of more like Ezekiel than going to Iraq or over to the Arab countries where there's more, or even when we go over and to places like India where Hinduism and stuff like that, where we're teaching something totally foreign to them.
Yeah, is that what you were talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it got received better. Yeah. Jonah's message was received better than Ezekiel's was, actually.
A lot better, apparently. Yeah. I mean, it's...
And it's true nowadays in India and places where the church is really growing, as opposed to here where it's not as much.
And a lot of it comes down to, if you're poor, these places are poor. I mean, they're receptive to it. And if they're rich, they've got everything that, new cars, new house, everything they need. Not so much. Some are, but.
See the need. Yeah. Well, there's a need to be met, People that don't have a need, they don't feel like they need God. But a lot of people feel like they already have Him. He's already blessing them if they have physical things.
Yeah,
I think there's another application. I agree with that one, too. I think another kind of illustration of the difference between the two is that I think in Ezekiel's place, what it kind of reminds me of is speaking to the church versus Jonah speaking to worldly people. And they're very different approaches, but yet the goal is the same. But how Ezekiel speaks to the Jewish people, very different than how Jonah would speak to Nineveh. And it's the same true with the church. There's certain expectation we have of quote unquote church people, members of the church, then we do people outside. But sometimes even us in the church can be need that as well. We can become as indifferent as the Jewish people have. We need to be careful about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, just, I guess that's the end. Van, would you mind leading us in a prayer?
Yeah.